Welcome to another episode of COVID Chronicles, a podcast by, for, and about people affiliated with Portland Mennonite Church in Portland, Oregon. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum, and my guest is Casey Fast. Welcome, Casey. It's great to have you with me.
I'm pleased to be here.
And I know that you've been listening, so you have some idea that we always start at the beginning, and I must admit, Casey, that I don't know a whole lot about you. So are you a native Oregonian, or where did life start for you?
I definitely am a native Oregonian. My grandfather's a native Oregonian. My mother kind of wandered across the Idaho border just a little bit. But yes, I was born in Dallas, Oregon, and on my father's side, a lot of Mennonites. So I possibly related to some of the people in the church. Bruce Harder and I've talked about this, and we think we might be distant cousins, but yeah, Dallas was my birthplace. Didn't stay there very long, though. My dad was a preacher. He started churches, helped start Assemblies of God Church in Dallas, and then we moved on to Siletz Indian Reservation for a couple of years. There was an abandoned building there, and he filled it up with people, and then we moved to clear over to Heppner, Oregon, on the other side of the state, a couple of years there. Finally, we got to a civilized town. That was Molalla. So I lived there 3 years, and then to Gresham, finished my high school there, and then we moved back to Estacada, of all things, because he just moved around finding people and starting little churches. So that was kind of my growing up years. After I married, I moved to Eugene and finished my graduate work down there. But yep, wandered around Oregon all my life.
You are probably the most native Oregonian I've talked to, because you've lived all over the state.
Yes.
And was it always the Assemblies of God Church that your father pastored?
Yes, he was a pastor. That, you know, Pentecostals are Assemblies of God are Pentecostals, have that reputation. But my dad was kind of a maverick. He really wasn't into all the demonstrative speaking in tongues and all that stuff. I did see that at camp meetings and church events and stuff. But my dad was an interesting character. He just sort of devoted his whole life to finding down and out people and helping them. And, you know, I really appreciate that upbringing. He wasn't really on good terms sometimes with the Assemblies of God, because he was very outspoken, and he'd tell them what they were doing wrong, that they were sending too many people to foreign countries and we ought to be doing more right here in Oregon, that kind of thing. So that was how I got moved all over the place, and met a lot of people and left a lot of friends behind. Yeah.
During those growing up years, when all of that moving around was happening, did you find that interesting or challenging or difficult? Do you remember kind of how you felt? And maybe it depended on what age you were.
You know, I started the first grade on a Native American reservation. And to me, that was just kind of the way it was. We were used to living in kind of primitive circumstances. My dad immigrated here from Canada, and we were fairly poor. So when we lived in Siletz, we hand pumped our water. We had to cut wood. We had outhouses. And for a kid, I don't know, it just seemed normal. My mother probably took most, but that's how she grew up too. She lived out in Vernonia and Sheridan, all those towns. And she started cleaning houses. She dropped out of school when she was, I think, a freshman in high school, and was cleaning houses and working. So they were both accustomed to a pretty rustic life. And I found it pretty adventuresome. I think it was harder for my older brother and sister. I have a sister that's 5 years older and a brother that's 7 years older. And so they were in high school and stuff. And, you know, they realized we were different from other kids. And so, but for me, it was just normal.
You just answered the question I was going to ask. Are there three of you siblings?
There are four, actually. My sister has passed away. She passed away 2 years ago. I have an older brother. He's living in Carson City. He's retired. His health is very poor. And a younger brother who lives down in Springfield. My younger brother and I are just 2 years apart. The older two were, you know, separated from us. My sister kind of acted like a surrogate mother for us, because mom and dad were always out working with people and helping. So, yeah, we were close to my sister. But my brother, my younger brother and I, we just had a great time growing up together, playing basketball, writing music, all kinds of crazy things.
Can you give me an example? You said that your father just was always helping down and out people. Is there a story about him doing that that you could maybe share with us?
Oh, my goodness. There's so many. And we were in Heppner last week, and I remember there was a guy that used to sit on the corner. His name was Benny. And Benny had really bad palsy and had suffered a lot from the effects of World War II. And he was a street person. I don't know where he slept at night, but my dad would go out and sit on the corner with Benny and talk to him, and he would bring him over to our house for dinner, and he smelled badly. But again, we thought it was really interesting. My brother and I, we'd try to talk to Benny, and that was the kind of person he looked for. Then out in Molalla, too, he lived on ranches and farms when he was a boy, and I like to talk to Joe Blowers about farming out there, because I can remember going out with my dad and him helping, you know, birth calves and round up sheep and all kinds of stuff. He just was always looking for a job to do and going out there and helping people wherever they needed help. Consequently, he was quite successful in drawing in, you know, the kind of the blue collar run of the, you know, the people that didn't really get much attention from the academic elites and the big mill owners in Molalla. There were three big lumber mills, and we had that really rich crowd. And then we had all of us normal people. So that's the way we operated.
Do you have any sense of how your mother felt about all of this? It sounds like he would just bring people home. And was she okay with that? Did you ever get any sense of where she stood in all of this?
No, Mom was receptive to that. Even more that complicated our lives is over the course of my life, my parents brought in 24 foster children into the house. And the one group was a group of nine Native American children that we had met when I was in the first grade. And then mother passed away. The father was an alcoholic. And when my folks heard about it, they just went and picked up the kids and they lived with us. I was about 12 years old when they moved in, and they ranged all the way from 18-month-old twin girls up to 16-year-old boys. So we slept bunk style. And that also, Dad and Mom were both really good about delegating assignments, so we all had to take part in cleaning the house and mowing the lawns. And I still look back on those really, you know, interesting times. We did have other welfare kids in and out that I've kind of lost track of. And unfortunately, most of our Native American brothers and sisters have passed away. Their health never was good. They all turned out, you know, they led normal lives. Most of them went to a community college or some kind of educational institution, higher education, but died of diabetes and heart problems and that kind of thing. Sad.
About how long did those nine children live with you?
Well, they came when I was about 12. We were just moving to Gresham. And then they stayed there clear after I left home, got married. And so I think, like I said, the youngest two were about 18 months. So there was about a 10, 11-year age difference between me and the two twin girls. So, yeah, another 10 years after I left home, they were still, my mom was taking care of them.
That is amazing. We're going to just pick up after high school. So remind us again where you graduated from high school.
Oh, high school was an interesting time for me. I was really fortunate. Went to Gresham High School, and they had just started a program for academically elite. And they gave a whole bunch of standardized tests and so on. And then they picked out a group of about 12 or 13, I think, or 12 of us ended up in it. I was always a really good student, but I hadn't thought much about it. And then when I ended up in high school, they said, you're going to be in this very special group. And I don't know what that means even. My life was centered around church. I was in church four or five nights a week, and I always did well in school. I practically lived in libraries when I was a kid. I loved to read, so that maybe helped me get a little head start on. So I was really lucky to go to that school. Fantastic teachers, I think. English composition was one of my best classes. Latin was super. I did well in math, all that stuff. And so I had no problem going to university. Nobody in my whole extended family, cousins, anybody had ever gone to a university. My parents really didn't even know what that meant.
Including your older siblings.
Well, that's another interesting thing. My sister, who is also really talented, she was valedictorian of her graduating class in Molalla. And Crown Zellerback gave her a full ride scholarship to go to any university in the United States, all expenses paid. And she declined and became a secretary and later married a preacher. And so my parents just said, that's fine. So I kind of just, I had a counselor in high school that called me into his office and he said, "You really need to think about university." And I said, "Well, why?" I was making good money in the summers working in a flavor pack fruit processing plant. And all of my cousins were doing well, buying and selling real estate and everything. So I didn't really know. And he said, "No, you really need to think about this." So I could tell you a lot more story about it. His name is Bud Monis, and Bud got me to apply for Portland State. And lo and behold, I got a full ride scholarship to go to Portland State. And it's hilarious because you know what the tuition was back then, Gloria? $33 a quarter. That's what it was. So, but at least I didn't have to pay for any books or tuition. And I lived out in Estacada and commuted into Portland State.
Was that the only university that you applied to?
That was the only one, yeah. So I know kids went to Harvard and Yale, and the woman that was in charge of this, one of the surgery departments up at OHSU, Karen Sir, she was a valedictorian of our class. She went to Stanford. All these kids went off to big schools, and I chose Portland State. But, and then I really wasted my time at Portland State. I really did. I was having so much fun playing basketball with my brother and my Native American brothers and sisters. And my brother and I, we'd write music every night, and we were teaching ourselves music, which probably wasn't very good. But it was, so I literally, my first couple of years at Portland State, I didn't go to classes. I could just go in, and based upon my high school education, which was really good, I could take tests. And I hope I don't sound like I'm bragging here. I was really pretty stupid in doing it this way. And my brother, he had so much fun that he flunked completely out of school. So it's crazy how kids, my parents weren't really concerned because we were paying our own way. We both had jobs. In fact, we contributed to the household living expenses, started paying, rent or whatever. So it wasn't until the end of Portland State that I wised up and saw I needed to do something.
So when you made the decision to go to university, to Portland State, did you have in mind what you might study, what the eventual goal would be, what a major, any of those kinds of things at all?
No, I really didn't. I've heard some of the other people on your interview say the same thing. They, a kid that's 18, he doesn't really know what he's doing. And I wandered into the basement of what was called Lincoln Hall then. I mean, it was called Old Main then. It's now Lincoln Hall. It's where they have the auditorium venues and stuff there. And I wandered in there, and they told me I had to have a major declared, and I didn't know what to do. And I saw mathematics, and I said, "Oh, okay, I did pretty well in math. Let's give that a try." That was basically the way I made my decision.
And that's what you actually ended up getting then?
Yes. Yeah. I actually, my junior year, I had to declare a major, and I really liked history. And so I had taken a lot of U.S. history classes. And so I could have chosen history at that point, but I decided the history maybe wasn't the best thing to teach or work in. So I decided to go into secondary ed mathematics.
And the goal would be to teach mathematics in high school.
Teach. Mm-hmm. And then I had another wake-up call because when I did my student teaching at Centennial, I found out that I ended up spending most of my time breaking up fights and looking for kids who were smoking marijuana. And it was a rough school. And I said, "Boy, I don't know if I want to do this." I really admire teachers. I really do. I wish we paid our teachers more and really respected them for what they do, because that is a tough job. It really is. And included, that's my younger brother, who's a teacher for 29 years, and he's super. Then I decided, well, maybe I'll go to graduate school. And so I applied at University of Oregon, and I went down there with, I didn't really have any plans. I went there, and the first day, the head of the department, Al Morrison, said, "Fast, you flunked the admissions test completely." So there I was in Eugene, ready to go to school, and I couldn't get into the program. So, yeah, it was, I was married, and all of a sudden I felt the responsibility, and wow, that was a tough time for me.
So about when was this in the 19 what?
That was 1965. But things, you know, kind of work out. I felt like I was smart enough. I felt like I realized I just wasted a lot of time. And I had two teachers at Portland State that I think pulled some strings behind the scenes for me, Constance Stevens and Mildred Bennett. I think they called Dr. Morrison. He never would admit to it. And I asked him later, I said, did somebody call you? And he said, oh, I'm not telling you. But I think they called him and told him to give me a chance. And he did. So I was admitted under probationary status. And my first 2 quarters, I had to take double load. I took 30 hours, which was a gigantic graduate school load, really heavy. And I wasn't a straight A student, but I made it.
So after you graduated from Portland State, that fall you went down to the U of O?
Yeah.
Like it was just the next thing you were going to do?
Just the next thing, you know.
And you got in yet that fall. How long did it take before you found out that you could?
Well, it was interesting because Dr. Morrison, after I'd been there a week and I didn't quite know what I was going to do, and he called and told me to come in. And he said, I think we're going to accept you on probationary status. And he said, in fact, I think I will give you a job grading papers. It seems like you might be able to grade calculus papers for us. So I had a little income. After that, Morrison took quite a liking to me. For one thing, I didn't have long hair. I wasn't a hippie. And he was an old German guy. He spoke with a very heavy accent. I later became friends with his son, David Morrison, who was a professor at the University of Oregon. Yeah, he sent jobs my way then. So I had to work really hard. I remember so vividly coming out of the steps of D.D. Hall, which they've changed the name now. That's the oldest building on Oregon campus. But I remember coming out at the end of my first quarter. It was snowing lightly, and I knew I had aced every test. And I felt so good. And it was snowing, and it was Christmas. So it was good.
What was your living situation at that point?
My wife and I married in my junior year. We're living in an apartment.
At Portland State.
Yeah. We continued to live out in Estacada for a while, and then later we moved to Eugene, and she was working as a teller at U.S. Bank, and I was doing my thing at graduate school. So, yeah, we paid our own way, and I was going to get a Ph.D. in math, and I had gone through 2 years of studies. I had my thesis topic picked. I had my committee all for agreement for me. And I just began to realize I did not want to be involved in theoretical math research. I could do it, but I really didn't like it all that much. So that was another hard decision. I didn't want to feel like a failure. You know, it's kind of hard when you've worked hard for something.
What was your master's in?
It was Master of Arts in Mathematics, Theoretical Math.
And now, did you know what you were going to do with it? It sounds like you had kind of poo-pooed the teacher idea. What now?
Well, I was attending a big church there. It was a fairly big Assemblies of God church. And one of the guys in the church, Paul Malm, had just been hired to teach at Lane Community College. 1967 was the year that Oregon opened 13 community colleges. They opened them all everywhere in the state. And all the community colleges had big money to spend, and they were hiring people. So I taught a part-time class. I actually took a job at the church. They wanted me to help set up an educational. They wanted to open a school. And I could go into that. It was not a good experience for me. I don't really want to talk much about it, maybe offline. But Paul got me to teach a part-time class at Lane Community College. And wouldn't you know, the president of the school's wife was in my class. She liked me. She thought it was a great class. Her husband was Dale Parnell, who became superintendent of education for the state of Oregon. You know, things like that, it's just interesting how they all fall into place. Her name was Beverly. And so I became a full-time teacher at Lane Community College. I really enjoyed that job. It was a fantastic job. Of all my jobs, that might be the favorite one, teaching mathematics at a community college, yeah.
Because your other experience had been with high school guys and girls, and college, I'm guessing, even community college was a step higher in terms of just the maturity and the interest of the students.
Yeah, the students in general were older. They were average age 24, 25. They were there because they wanted to study. We were beginning to get a lot of the Vietnam vets into the class, young men coming back from the war. My philosophy of teaching was to go way beyond mathematics. I really tried to explain to students that if you're in college, you should be looking for a lot more than just passing this class. And I said, what you're going to learn here, you probably won't use too much. If you take my calculus or my numerical analysis class, it's not going to be something you do. But what you develop here is discipline. You develop reasoning skills. You develop ways of presenting your ideas. So I really did focus on that. I would spend probably a half hour every week just discussing that with my students and encouraging them to bring in things that they wanted to talk about. So, yeah, I really enjoyed my class. I'm still online Facebook friends with, some of those college kids. So it was a great educational experience. I'm a believer in community college education. I'm sad now, though, that maybe I can get into politics here, but I'm sad that community colleges no longer have very many full-time faculty. Back then, we had like 15 full-time faculty members in just mathematics. Now I know people there that are like one or two full-time and the rest are all adjuncts. So it's very difficult to have any continuity or any real consistency in what's taught.
Well, we're going to take a major leap forward because somehow you ended up, well, first of all, we'll say that the wife that you talked about was not Liz.
No,
no. So we're going to jump way ahead and somehow you ended up at Portland Mennonite Church.
Well, Liz and I have known each other 27 years, and the story of how we got acquainted, that's a whole interesting story. I'll skip that part. But when we married, I had been attending a friend's church, a Quaker church. I was living in Eugene and Corvallis area. I owned a business, and I was doing a lot of commuting. So I had been going to the Quaker church, and she was, too, going to a friend's church here in Portland. The Reedwood Friends. And so when we married, we decided that that's where we wanted to go. And unfortunately, the church had some difficulties. There were some, church conflict. It was a really sad situation. The pastor, who was a good friend of ours, left. People couldn't agree on a new pastor. And I've seen that happen in other churches. It never happened in my dad's churches. There are always people that are questioning things. But so then we didn't have a church to go to. And we both are really committed to trying to involve ourselves in other cultures and stuff. So we went to a church out on MLK. It was called Genesis. It was about 80% black congregation. And we went there for a year and a half. And I loved the people. I loved the experience. It really wasn't a fit, though. And we finally decided it was probably time for us to move on. And that was also a puzzling time in my life. So then we kind of drifted around. Liz, is an editor of Christian books. So she knows pretty much every minister and speaker. She's getting a little out of touch now because she's only working part-time. But so she knew half the pastors and ministers in Portland area. She's much fussier about church than I am. And so I said, okay, you find a place and we'll go. And interestingly enough, another friend recommended Portland Mennonite to her. So she told me she was going to go to the Mennonite church. And I said, oh, that's great. My dad, his family of Mennonites up in Canada. And she went one time and she came back and said, you are going to love this church. And I said, okay, well, I'll check it out. So I went back one week and I said, okay, the church search is over. I'm overruling any other suggestions you have. This is where I want to go to church. Rod's sermon. I think, Gloria, you might have, I think Harold was playing the piano that morning. If I'm not, I love the music so much, and I love your participation in some of the, the openings part of the service. I just am so humbled by the people. And get a little emotional here because I do love you guys. So I'm a Mennonite. There you go.
And I was going to say that, well, a couple of things. First of all, with the name Fast, my sense was that there probably was some kind of Mennonite in your background or your family's background.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's my dad's relatives migrated from Holland to Germany to Russia, and then, you know, under persecution and so on, came to Canada, and some of them went to the Midwest and to Kansas. And so there were several Fast brothers, my great grandfather and so on, came to Canada. They were all Mennonites in a German and Russian speaking community. My dad could speak a little bit of English, but it was mostly German and Russian. And a sad story, because my grandmother got pregnant out of wedlock. It happens, you know. And so the church came down very hard on them and said, if you don't come to church and stand with the elders and confess your sin, then you cannot be married here. And so they did that. My grandfather walked out the door and said, I will never go back to church again in my life. So my grandmother continued to go. And my dad kind of grew up with a Mennonite background, but he was not a Christian at all when he came to the United States. He actually, my mother was on it, helped him get back at a Missionary Alliance church.
And I think you've pretty much answered the other question, which is, what was it about Portland Mennonite? And I think you've already said it sounds like everything, but the people specifically, or?
Yeah, you know, I like the music a lot. I'm not so familiar with the songs that you guys sing, or that we sing, actually. We sang a lot more Pentecostal stuff, you know, when the roll is called up, the honor and power and the blood and that kind of stuff. My oldest brother is a trained musician. He actually sang tenor with the Portland Symphonic Choir and stuff for a while, but I was all self-taught. But I still love to try to read music and sing. And so the first Sunday, just standing there, you know, in the third or fourth row and hearing all that music coming up behind me, it was really great. And I like the music selection. I like having all three of those, you know, hymnals. I like it sometimes when they grab a song by Andre Crouch or, you know, one of the gospel singers. That I actually sang in concert with Andre Crouch probably four or five times. That was part of my brother and I getting into kind of gospel folk music. But yeah, the music is wonderful. And I've really been fascinated by all the people and their service work, yours included. And you know, I just, a year or so ago at Twin Rocks, Jesse Hotstetler started telling me about her work in Vietnam, and I couldn't believe it. It made my life on a Native American reservation sound pretty tame, you know? So these kind of things just show me that people, their sincerity and the depth of their belief. So, yeah, I really admire that. I like intentionality in worship. I like people who say they want to, you know, they do what they believe. And so that's very important to me. And so Liz and I have been involved with a lot of different service organizations in Mexico and here out in MLK, a youth choir and things like that. And I just think it's an important part of life. Yeah. I really loved Rod's sermons, too, by the way. Rod is a good speaker. The funny thing is, when he leaves, there are three or four people get up there and speak almost as well as he does. So, and what do you got to lose?
Well, Casey, this has been a very fast half hour, and I can't believe how quickly it's gone by. But thank you so much for giving us this little glimpse into some of the stories of your life.
Thank you. My pleasure.
And thank you for joining us for this episode of COVID Chronicles. We hope you discovered something new and feel more connected to your friends at Portland Mennonite. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum. Until next time, stay well and keep the faith.